Our second reading today is an excerpt from The Value of Work by Dr. Patricia Frisch. Work in all its shapes and sizes creates definition, an outline that contains the wild and woolly elements that compromise a human life. Why is work so important? When you are mentally and physically healthy, you work, meaning you are actively engaged in your life in a structured way. When you are committed to your job or career or a project, you approach it industriously and conscientiously. You meet your goals and enjoy the fruits of your labor. Work gives you personal and professional meaning, purpose, a sense of satisfaction, and possibly financial compensation. You express your creativity and you contribute your unique gifts to the larger community. When we are able to move forward and activate projects, activities, and meaningful endeavors, we experience our aliveness. We are expressing our whole self. We have defined a structure that supports and manifests form in our lives. Whatever our situation, we can commit to activating ourselves at whatever level we are able. From the enjoyment of cooking a meal and writing a poem, managing our home and volunteering, tutoring or finding a new and better job, we invest in a discovery process that allows us to design a new and unique place to thrive. Here ends the second reading.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us here this morning. Tomorrow is Labor Day, a day to celebrate those who labor. Started as a series of union-led strikes in the late 1800s, signed into law as a federal holiday in 1894 by Grover Cleveland, Labor Day was designated as a day to celebrate the working man. But I would ask only the working man, what about the working women and the working children? The poor ones, the ones working 12 hours a day, the tired ones, the ones working 6 days a week with no workplace safety requirements, no vacation, no sick leave, no health coverage. In the 1800s, it was a jungle, as in Upton Sinclair's book titled The Jungle. Cleveland gave us a day off to celebrate what? Exactly. A relationship that seems more like wage slavery or indentured servitude, which benefits the ruling and owning classes at the expense of the workers. Last year, for Labor Day, Sue Andrews did a beautiful service celebrating the struggles of the working class. She did a lovely job lifting up the union movement, which ultimately gave us workplace safety rules, a 40-hour work week, minimum age, minimum wage, and so much more, which we take for granted today. My focus this year is on labor and how our work lives are dramatically and rapidly changing. The current international pandemic, laid on top of a consistent decline in domestic manufacturing, has turned the working world, and for many people, employment, on its ear. Because of the pandemic, we experienced an almost complete collapse of the food service and entertainment industries, while at the same time, there continued to be a gradually increasing number of college grads who leave school with massive student debt and are woefully underemployed or can't find work in their field at all. I am tempted to add in an English or philosophy major joke here. But I won't. I won't because I can no longer say the job skills you may be needing are to ask, would you like fries with that order? Because those jobs have, for the most part, stopped. The restaurant industry is on its knees due to COVID-19. Many of those students and minimum wage workers are now unemployed and don't have a clue as to what comes next. At the same time, as you may find yourself waiting weeks or months for a concrete contractor or a carpenter, if you can even find one willing to return your phone calls. Machine shops, welding shops, auto repair facilities, and a host of other skilled labor fields have been and continue to be chronically shorthanded. Jobs that can't be outsourced or can't be done over the internet are sometimes even offering hiring bonuses or paying for your training. How much did you pay for the opportunity to have a furnace repairman or a plumber step into your house to look at your troubles? Years ago, it cost me $90 to have him show up and tell me I needed a $3,000 furnace replacement. I couldn't afford the furnace, but I still had to pay the guy for his inspection time. We are truly in mixed-up times regarding work and labor. On top of the simultaneous labor surplus and labor shortage, most of us feel reluctant to change employers or become self-employed for fear of income loss and, more importantly, health insurance or retirement funding loss. The workers have become less mobile, while the employers are finding greater flexibility by eliminating permanent jobs in place of contract labor, which provides no benefits and requires no commitment on the part of the employer. The gig economy is growing ever larger, while unions grow ever smaller. The working world is not as bad as it once was, but it is still not a good time to be a worker. I'd like a job that isn't so jobby, where I can do work that isn't so worky. So how can I make how I earn become less of my self-identity? How can I find joy or a sense of accomplishment in my labor? How can my work become more fulfilling to me, the labor provider? Musicians work very hard to play good music. Baseball is played, but played by highly skilled, highly trained, and well-paid employees who work hard at doing what they do, which is playing in a game. Louis Weinhandel, a stonemason from Slovenia, worked at my house recently repairing basement walls. He was in his 80s. He worked very hard physically. He also laughed a lot. He always took his lunch break, and he seemed to enjoy doing what he did. He took pride in his work, and it was work, but it didn't seem laborious. It often seemed that he was playing with the rocks and the cement I had paid him to move around. Walt Hancock used to work in the University of Nebraska electronics shop. While he had a PhD, he spent his days fixing electronic gear for the chemistry department, which was broken. He also had a 2-year backlog of things that needed attention. And yet every day he showed up happy, smiling, cheerfully listening to people complain about how long they had to wait for their broken electronic thing to be repaired. And granted, the university wasn't going to fire him for being behind. But I still asked him, how do you hold up under the weight of all the work and all the complaining? He said he just lets it slide off his back and he doesn't take it personally. Years before Don Miguel Ruiz wrote the book, Walt Hancock knew one of the secrets in that book. One of the secrets to being happy is don't take anything personally. The book is called The Four Agreements. If you haven't read it, I highly recommend it as an accessible and very helpful resource. 25 years later, I'm still trying to learn what Walt demonstrated for me. He detached his sense of self-identity from how he earned. He didn't take the backlog or the complaints as a personal insult or offense. His self-identity was not who he was as a worker, but who he was as a person. Now, there is more help available with this shift in thinking about work. The Buddha gave instructions many, many years ago in the Eightfold Path on how to engage work so it may not consume you. The fifth of the eight suggestions in the Eightfold Path is right livelihood. Back in his day, this meant don't do work which causes suffering for others. Don't get paid to make weapons or cause harm to others. And I wonder, what would that mean today? Don't work for big petroleum or big pharma? But is the plastic industry okay to work for? What about Dow Chemical or Monsanto? Are they good or bad? I don't know. I wonder what you think. What constitutes right livelihood in today's world? For more guidance, I would encourage you to turn to the YuYu Principles, a number of which speak directly to being in right relationship with how you earn. The first YuYu Principle, the inherent worth and dignity of every person, even at work. The second principle, justice, equality, and compassion in human relationships, even at work. The fifth principle, the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations, society at large, and even at work. And lastly, the seventh principle, respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part, even while we are at work. The Mennonites and the Amish have also looked at the relationship with laboring and work. They have a saying, "Work is love made visible. What I do shows you that I care. Since this labor I'm performing is for your benefit, it is a way of showing I care about you as a person. You've asked me to do this for you. I'll respect you and the work before me and give you good quality labor to accomplish this task at hand." Which is exactly what Gary Chapman turned into a book writing empire with his five languages of love. The second being acts of service as a way of showing I care. While an act of service theoretically is done without recompense, I'd propose that you are most likely not paid enough for what you do and for what you have to put up with on your job. Your job is in some ways an act of service, and oh, by the way, there is some money in it for you as well, but most likely not enough. So unless we want to live naked in the tropics, eating only the fruit that falls from the trees, income is universally necessary for our survival. For most of us, that income is tied to our labor, which is mostly the job that we have. On this Labor Day, I want to present an idea that Andrew Yang brought to the presidential race during his brief time as a candidate: universal basic income. Now, it sounds rather socialistic, but then so are fire departments, municipal garbage collection, Medicare, and libraries. And we seem to do all right with those. So stick with me for 1 minute and consider what might happen if universal basic income were a reality. This next segment comes from a Twitter feed by someone named Mad Laurie, and it is on universal basic income. Mad Laurie says, "People should not have to work. People should want to work. Sharing in the labor of building and maintaining a society because it benefits everyone should be desirable, not enforced. It shouldn't be something we do because we'll die otherwise. Imagine a society where survival did not depend upon a job. Imagine how that would alter the fabric of everything. Imagine, just imagine if you could leave a job without feeling the, or without fearing the loss of income or health care. Imagine for a minute if a person could survive without a job. Imagine what employers would be like if that were true. They might be compelled to treat their workers more fairly and make the job environment more attractive to entice new workers. And before you say it, yes, some people will take advantage of universal basic income. That is true for absolutely everything ever. Someone will find a way to take advantage of it. But you think people don't take advantage of the economy we currently have? Of course they do. Look at the 1% who grow dramatically wealthier year after year, while their employees who generate that wealth sometimes work two or three jobs and maybe still need food stamps and rent-controlled housing. Many employers can pay less than a respectful wage because people are terrified of losing their jobs, and the overwhelming feeling of loss of control, shame, and fear that follows. Many of us are so afraid that we tolerate mistreatment, disempowerment, the destruction of our unions, our health care, our retirement programs, and even damage to our own physical bodies just to avoid losing our job. What if desperation didn't motivate everything? Imagine the impact on health, on relationships, on parenting, well-being, crime, violence. Imagine a society where the terror of destitution was not a constant thrum underneath so many people's everyday existence. Imagine the children it could raise. Imagine the elderly it could care for. Imagine the inventions it could produce. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join me and the world will be as one. That is obviously John Lennon, the lyrics from a portion of his song called Imagine. And so until we get to that imagined day and time, I hope you can use some time tomorrow on Labor Day to reflect how you will stay in right relationship with how you earn. And remember that not all labor has to be work, and that work and play can commingle. Remember that you are so much more than how you earn. Remember to let your UU principles guide you in making good choices on how to foster a healthy relationship with how you earn. I hope you can find a way to work hard and to show your love through your work, and at the same time, maybe take it just a little less personally. Maybe find a way to bring some joy into what you do, even if, or maybe particularly if, your job requires that you ask me if I want fries with that order. And maybe, just maybe, your job won't feel so jobby anymore. And maybe your work won't feel so worky anymore. So be it. Blessed be. Thank you.